Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's much simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with France 24. Tuesday was October 7th, and there were commemorations in the Israeli press as well as the international papers. In France, the president, currently Macron, appoints the prime minister. A month ago, Sebastien Lecornu was given the position after 2 others had failed in the previous 12 months, and now he has resigned. This has led to calls for Macron to call snap elections or resign. This is a political crisis talked about in the second press review. Then, following Trump's apparently successful first phase of a peace deal in Palestine, the press speculated on whether he would see his dream of a Nobel Peace Prize come to pass. In Venezuela, there have been large protests against the U.S. military assassination of boats allegedly transporting drugs in the Caribbean, and President Maduro claimed to have prevented a false flag operation on the U.S. Embassy in Caracas. An interview with Phil Gunson of the International Crisis Group on the conflict between the U.S. and Venezuela. France 24.
The second anniversary of the October the 7th attacks in Israel. How the papers are commemorating the event. First of all, they're in Israel itself, Emily.
Commemorations and tributes all over the Israeli papers. Let's start with the Times of Israel. They have this article here, looking at the different ways in which victims of October 7th are being remembered in Israel. The article says that families of hostages still cannot believe that some are still being held captive. Ynet features an interview here with a former hostage whose partner is still held by Hamas. She describes her time in captivity and her campaign to get her boyfriend released. The Jerusalem Post, though, is talking about anti-Semitism following the attacks. The paper says that Hamas's assault let out the genie of anti-Semitism and that a clear plan of action is needed to fight back. Now, finally, in Israel, the left-wing paper Haaretz has this opinion piece here today, looking at October 7th, but focusing on October 8th. It describes the trauma of the Hamas massacre, but says that, quote, the ensuing Israeli campaign of atrocities in Gaza destroyed the foundations on which the state of Israel was built.
What about the international papers? What are they saying?
Well, a lot as well on the international papers, starting in Spain. This is an opinion piece in El País. It condemns the nightmare that has become routine. It says that the 2 years since the attacks have been 730 days of death and bombings, and argues that Israel used October 7th to, quote, eliminate the possibility of coexisting with a Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the Swiss paper Le Temps has this long format article here, talking about the death of pacifism in the Israeli kibbutz. They quote the son of an October 7th victim who says that, honestly, the bombs on Gaza feel good to me. The article says that many Israelis have lost hope of cohabitation with Palestinians. Now, finally, back to France and Le Figaro. This is an article here today looking at the international support for Israel following the October 7th attacks, support which they seem to have completely lost today. The article says that more countries now denounce Israel's, quote, excesses of war than they do support Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, it's all the French papers are talking about is this latest political crisis. And I've chosen three front pages today from the French press, starting with Libération. They've always got quite strong front pages. And this one in particular just reads naked. The paper says the president has never been more vulnerable. Lacroix here is talking about Macron as well. They have a photo of him by himself and a headline which reads Macron alone in the face of the crisis. It says calls for Macron to step down are growing by the day, and the president is looking more and more alienated. Now, this is a feeling that is echoed in Le Figaro on their front page here this morning. Their headline reads, Macron dropped by his own. Two of his former close allies have come out and spoken against him. Gabriel Attal, who claims he no longer understands Macron's decisions, and Edouard Philippe calling on him to organise his resignation.
Dipti's joining us for the press review. Dipti, big question in the papers today. Is Donald Trump then going to get his Nobel Peace Prize after all?
Yeah, I think probably a statement we never thought we'd be taking so seriously, but it is a case, despite a Hail Mary peace plan between Hamas and Israel, Nobel Peace Prize committee members are reportedly, as the Daily Beast says, laughing at Donald Trump's Peace Prize hopes. It's hard to take seriously, they've said, the Daily Beast, citing a report by the Financial Times. And the Norwegian press seems to think so, too. This is from a Norwegian daily here, this headline reading threats or, well, it's reading essentially he's begging or he's begging and he's threatening his way into a peace prize. And here it says, maybe we should just give it to him so we'll be done with it. While an opinion piece from this Norwegian paper here says that he's outright obsessed with the idea of getting a Nobel Peace Prize. This despite the fact that his past actions and comments could actively disqualify him, for instance, berating President Zelensky in the Oval Office, threatening military force to take the Panama Canal back, and belligerent behavior towards allies.
Yeah, one website says the Donald Trump Peace Prize might not be so far-fetched, given the prize's history.
Yeah, that's right. It's from this Australian website, Crikey, which I don't have here, but I'll tell you what they say. They say maybe Donald Trump getting the prize might actually be in keeping with the history of the Nobel Peace Prize. Alfred Nobel, the founding father, made his fortune inventing dynamite and modern explosives, and then he became directly involved in manufacturing weapons. He later justified this by saying that he hoped his weapons would make civilized nations recoil in horror and disband their troops. And then in 1973, Henry Kissinger got the Peace Prize, this after extending the Vietnam War into Cambodia, and then financing, arming, and ultimately betraying the Iraqi-Kurdish insurrection against Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, in any case, Dipti, the Nobel fate rests, doesn't it, in the hands of just five people?
It does, and that's what the Times of London says today. It says here that along with the recipe for Coke and nuclear submarines, the Nobel Peace Prize deliberations are one of the most secretive processes on the planet. There are five people, five Norwegians with Donald Trump's prize dream in their hands. And no one, it appears, past and present, is above bribery. For instance, one chairman revealing that he was once taken to Disneyland and offered a trip to a brothel, which he declined, while past laureates have lobbied. Everyone agrees that no one has lobbied as hard as Donald Trump. One journalist is cited as wondering, will he impose additional tariffs on Norway if he doesn't get the Peace Prize? But we'll find out on Friday when those nominees are announced.
Well, the warning comes as protesters take to the streets of the Venezuelan capital this week to denounce U.S. military threats in the Caribbean. President Nicolas Maduro says his government has foiled a false flag operation by local terrorists to plant explosives at the American embassy in Caracas and exacerbate a worsening dispute with Washington over drug trafficking. It comes as Donald Trump calls off efforts to reach a diplomatic agreement, paving the way for a possible military escalation. Eliza Herbert has more.
A false flag. A plot intended to lay blame on another party has been foiled at the US Embassy in Venezuela. President Nicolas Maduro said Monday his security forces had halted the attempt after being tipped off.
There were two sources. One was national and the other international. They were followed up on, and both agreed on the possibility that a local extremist terrorist group had placed an explosive device at the U.S. Embassy in Caracas.
In the televised interview, Maduro also said he had written to Pope Leo to help maintain peace in the South American country as tensions flare with the United States. A topic at heart for these Venezuelans who marched through the capital on Tuesday protesting recent US military threats.
I'm here today because we want to tell the President of the United States that this is a country of peace, not war. And we've always been peaceful. And to tell Mr. Trump to take his ships and his few batteries that he has here, because this is not a drug trafficking country.
US President Donald Trump has been bragging about his deadly anti-drug operations off the Venezuelan coast.
We're so good at it that there are no boats. In fact, even fishing boats, nobody wants to go into the water anymore.
On Friday, his military targeted another suspected drug trafficking boat. It was the fourth strike in the region in recent weeks, the legality of which is in doubt, with the death toll believed to be over 20. The US has also been building up its vessels in the Caribbean Sea, and President Trump is reportedly weighing up whether to advance to a second military phase, one that could include attacks on sites in Venezuela.
With more, we're joined now by Phil Gunson, Senior Consultant for the Andes region at the International Crisis Group. Phil, thanks so much for being with us on the program. If you can, tell us what exactly is at the heart of this worsening dispute.
Well, it depends who you talk to, really. Some people believe that this supposed anti-drugs operation is really aimed at toppling the government of Nicolas Maduro. And certainly there have been plenty of indications out of Washington that they want to capture Maduro, who they say is a fugitive from justice, and take him to face trial in the United States. There are other objectives as well. I mean, certainly part of it is to do with drugs, but there is a big question mark, as your introduction indicated, over the extent to which, Nicolas Maduro and his government, the extent to which Venezuela is really a major player in the drugs that are entering the United States.
Is there any real possibility, though, that the US might actually attempt a full-scale incursion? We have heard Donald Trump, ramp up that rhetoric, saying the US now considers itself to be in a non-international armed conflict. What exactly does he mean by that?
Well, part of this is to do with domestic US politics. Of course, Trump is very much focused on deporting as many immigrants from the US as he possibly can. And one of the ways in which he wants to do that, accelerate the process, is to use something called the Alien Enemies Act, which is only really applied in wartime, to avoid the necessity for taking people going to court. In other words, you could deport people instantly without any due process. And of course, it's much easier to convince the courts that he can apply that act if he claims that there's an actual war going on. So it's not all to do with regime change in Venezuela.
And is Maduro himself, preparing for more extreme measures? He also seems to be ramping up the rhetoric as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, of course, the government here is saying that whatever happens, they will continue to resist. Nobody believes that the Venezuelan armed forces could very long resist the kind of force that the US currently has arrayed against them. But the government has said that, if they were overthrown, if there was a US intervention, then they would take to the hills, basically, and carry out guerrilla warfare for as long as it takes. And they're openly speaking about another Vietnam. How realistic that is another matter.
What would it take for the US to actually withdraw from where it is right now?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because they kind of have to reach a point where they can say mission accomplished and the fleet steams away. They can't keep it there forever. It's a very expensive operation. And the longer they go on without really achieving anything, the more the pressure is on them to show that something tangible has come out of this. And I think that's probably one of the dangers in the sense that to the extent that so far they haven't really achieved very much, there's a more likelihood that we'll see attempts to blow things up on land. Probably, I mean, nobody, I don't think, is really thinking in terms of an actual US invasion. Putting ground troops in, it doesn't seem to be on the cards, at least at the moment. But I think we might well see some explosions. Whether that would convince Maduro, I tend to think it wouldn't, and unless, of course, the US is determined to go all out and attack Caracas, attack the military and civilian headquarters here, and perhaps even go for targeted assassinations. But it remains to be seen. Really, Trump has the last word, and he's rather unpredictable.
That's Phil Gunson, senior consultant for the Andes region at the International Crisis Group. Thank you.
Those press reviews and interview were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. On Friday, all the boats in the Global Summit flotilla had been captured by Israeli troops in international waters, and the crews were taken to prisons in Israel. Many countries represented in the 450 crew members have objected to the Israeli action, and massive protests took place around the world. An interview with journalist and Cambridge lecturer Alina Trabattoni about the protest in Italy, calling for government action to declare Palestinian statehood and charges of genocide against Israel. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
A large-scale civilian humanitarian mission has failed to reach its stated goal of delivering symbolic aid to Gaza and of breaking the Israeli siege of the territory. Israeli forces intercepted the last vessel sailing towards Gaza on Friday and have arrested around 450 activists. The convoy had been sailing in international waters, prompting world leaders, rights groups and lawyers to accuse Israel of violating maritime law. Protests have also been staged in cities around the world.
This is the moment the crew of the last boat in the flotilla trying to reach Gaza realise their mission is over. Seconds later, Israeli soldiers board their vessel and order them to put their hands in the air. Then, the live signal is cut. They too are now being detained by Israel and will likely be deported along with the other 470 activists seized after seeking to break the siege and deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza.
This is real abuse. They're committing a crime. The sea belongs to everyone. They have every right to come and to deliver food.
Anger at Israel's interception of the flotilla and the starvation of civilians in Gaza is mounting. The Spanish city of Barcelona is one of several places around the world to stage demonstrations. Several thousand people also spontaneously took to the streets of the Swiss city of Geneva to denounce Israel and show solidarity with Palestinians.
Today we are gathered to demand the release of all activists who were detained by Israel during the non-violent humanitarian mission to the Gaza Strip with humanitarian aid.
In Brazil too, activists and students protested against the interception. They called for the crews of the flotilla to be set free and for Brasilia to sever ties with Israel. Tens of thousands march peacefully through the Italian capital, Rome, although acts of vandalism and some violence were reported after rallies in other cities, including Turin and Milan. Demonstrations have continued across Italy in the form of a general strike called by several unions. Activists there also condemned Israel's treatment of the crew of the flotilla and the Gazan civilians and children being killed every day.
Let's take a closer look at one of those protests in Italy with freelance journalist Alina Trabattoni, who joins us from Rome. Welcome, Alina. What do the protesters there say they want?
Well, they basically say enough is enough. There's been way, way too much violence. And they're calling on the Italian government to officially recognize the state of Palestine and also to call the violence to confirm that it is genocide. Now, of course, confirming that it is genocide has a whole series of implications in terms of international law. And the Italian government is very much dragging its feet on this. Compared to other European countries, including the UK, Spain, the Netherlands, that have made this affirmation and condemned it for genocide, Italy yet still has to go down this route.
Of the hundreds of activists detained, around 40 are said to be Italian, including some members of parliament. How's that going down?
Well, in actual fact, they've already come back to Italy because behind the scenes, the Italian government has been very, very active in trying to placate tensions and urging Israel not to take out any force, not to, put anyone in danger. And actually in negotiating the release of the Italians that have been detained in Israel as soon as possible. It was said that they would be returned within 24, 48 hours. The Italian government has said it won't pay for their flights back, but the consulates and the embassies on site will be providing full assistance and evidently have been because four of the members of the parliament have already returned to Rome.
Israel's interception of this flotilla in international waters has been criticised by national leaders around the world. Tell us more about the Italian government's position.
Well, the Italian government position is actually quite difficult because there's an informal poll going round circulating that apparently the government has actually seen and that has caused grave concern within cabinet members that states that 80% of Italians back a firm position in terms of Gaza, in terms of calling the violence their genocide, and in terms of recognizing the state of Palestine. Now, 80% of a population of 60 million is a very large number. It's a huge chunk of public opinion. So that's creating huge domestic pressure on Italian Premier Giorgia Meloni. So far, though, they haven't agreed or decided to pursue the requests of the population. But what the protests are unique because they cut through all different political colours. You have people from the extreme left, from the extreme right. They cut through all swathes of society. You have people in their 70s, in their 80s. I even saw someone in their 90s today. You have children, university students. You have managers from multinationals, you have office workers, street cleaners, musicians, artists, the works. So it's very, very, very widely felt. We'll need to see what Italy actually does in terms of concrete action, because the pressure, people tell me, is not going to stop. They're just going to carry on and on until something gives. Because, as one person said, we are the flotilla of the land. They may have detained the seaborne flotilla, but we are here, and we are here in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions, she said, and they're not going to stop until action is taken.
Thank you for that. Journalist Elena Trabattoni in Rome.
That interview and report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, also most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show like a listener in Lake County did this week, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The UK has announced plans to crack down even further on protests. Another 500 people were arrested on terrorism charges on Saturday for carrying signs saying that they support Palestine action. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The UK government has promised new legislation to crack down on repeated demonstrations in a new move targeting pro-Palestinian protesters. Home Secretary Sabana Mahmood made the announcement on Saturday in the wake of the arrest of hundreds of demonstrators in London who had gathered to protest the prohibition of Palestine action. Speaking to Sky News, Mahmood said that the police would be given the ability to require protesters to change location if the demonstrators were responsible for repeated disorder. What I will be making explicit is that cumulative disruption, that is to say, the frequency of particular protests in particular places, and is in and of itself a reason for the police to be able to restrict and place conditions. She said the new legislation will not be a ban on protests, but they will get very strict with protesters, arrest them, and they face multiple years in prison. The UK government made forbidden the Palestine action under anti-terror law in July after members broke into an airbase and damaged two planes with paint and crowbars, saying that they were used for military operations in Gaza and across the Middle East. That designation of a terrorist group puts Palestine action on a par with Islamic State under British law, making it a criminal offense to show support for or invite support for the group, punishable by up to 14 years in prison under the Terrorism Act of the year 2000. The group Defend Our Juries has staged a series of protests demanding that the prescription be overturned, drawing growing numbers of people willing to risk arrest under the Terrorism Act. Hundreds hold a sign that say, "I oppose genocide, I support Palestine action," and for that, they are arrested and face possible prison time. More than 2,000 people have been arrested since the ban on Palestine action, with 890 people detained at one demonstration in Parliament Square alone on the 6th of September last month, the highest tally yet.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well most of the time at radio8c.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radio8c.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time, most of the time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to work harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. Since I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.